Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. Have frog will travel, as those of you know. I hope you are enjoying the marketing. We've kind of thrown a lot of marketing at you. And hopefully you're beginning to understand that what you get out of G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News is the stories that don't even pop up on a lot of other, I'll just say conservative, like Epoch Times and so forth. Some of them may, but not all of them. As a matter of fact, I know Mr. Griffin goes out of his way to find these types of stories that are not just of interest, but have consequences. Anyway, as you know, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that provides you with the academic evidence and academic-based solutions of where we are, what we're doing, and what the heck we've got to get done. We got to get your state legislators involved. We need you to start getting involved at your state level. We got to stop focusing at the federal level. As long as we are focused at the federal level, we will lose because that's where they want you to focus. They do not want you to understand what would really fix the problem, what would get them, what would force them back into getting the genie back into the bottle. How's that? Or back into the framework of the Constitution. So, as you know, we've got a comment line, and we're more than willing to play anybody that wants to call and provide a comment, question, or what have you. We've already played one person. I didn't mention his name, but we will play anybody who has a real question as to what you want to do. As a matter of fact, as I've said, if it pans out that it would really require a 5-10 minute talk, a conversation as to what the question is or the depth of the question, then we'll actually call you back. But that phone number again is 425-270-5416. If by chance you're paying long distance, you can email us at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. If you happen to be in, you know, that one small percentage of the entire telephone market within the United States that still charges long distance, then give us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Thank you for tuning in. As our numbers still looking great, we really appreciate what we want. Which what this means is not that I'm making any more money. What this means is more people are getting the message, which means that I've been getting busier and busier working in different states in helping people start expanding this information. And what we want to do today is kind of finish up the marketing. But before we do, I want to talk about a few things that, to me, I believe are really important, and we're actually pushing these things forward so that you can understand what can really be done at your state level. I mean, you know, can we actually do a 1-2 punch at the state level against the federal government? And I'm telling you, we can, especially if we get you involved. So anyway, let's just kind of move forward because you already know what's coming up once we get through marketing. It will be the Missouri Compromise and the Monroe Doctrine and moving forward into the Department of Interior being last. But anyway, I'm not sure if many people took solace in President Biden's comment that, quote, faith provides hope in darkness, close quote. This completely lacks context as far as I'm concerned, because when you really think about what he's talking about, I honestly believe there are some questions, or we have to place this into context to be very accurate on this, because how has darkness come to be? Or what is the source of this darkness that he speaks of? Is he speaking of darkness from the fear of virus? Because we've all been recoiled into our homes, hiding like the Jews in Passover, putting the blood on the, you know, at the top of their doorways. Is that the fear? Or is that the obedience? I don't think so. And as a matter of fact, if so, where did this fear, come from? And as a matter of fact, especially a fear that you have less than 1% chance of the population able to die. As Griffin and I myself and a lot of people have pointed out, you know, COVID actually eradicated the flu. Because there's more money in declaring that the virus that you have, which may be flu-like, is COVID. I remember when we moved up here to where we are today, and I think it was 2016, I caught the flu, and it was one of the worst flus I had had. I mean, I was knocked out. I had no strength. I couldn't do anything. And I was down for at least 2 weeks. And so when you, kind of similar to the pneumonia, I mean, the pneumonia actually took a long time for me to heal, but I can tell you that the flu was far more painful. Anyway, it's one of those things you think you're going to die. And sometimes when people are in that situation, they find religion, if you know what I mean. Anyway, so back to this whole thing of fear, and is he alluding to the fact that America is in fear, and that, you know, this fear has come from the programming, then the inculcating of the news media, the government, and everybody else, because they know better, and they're doing everything for us so that we can save our lives from this terrible, you know, highly contagious, highly deadly fear where, almost 1% of the population is going to be able to die on an annual basis. Not even close, right? I mean, only 0.1%. If there's 330 million people and they could only rack up however hundreds of thousands, you got to remember, that's not even 1%. It's not even 1%. So this is what they are doing to us. They are driving this fear, but actually, is the darkness really from the fear, or is the darkness from the unconstitutional draconian measures that are put into place by the despots and tyrants that are doing their part to destroy this economy? And when I say this, I'm not talking, now that Biden's in, Biden can take the reins away from these governors and actually tear and shred and burn what's left of the Constitution. You can thank your governor, your former governor in Montana, and your former governor or your governors at your state and say, why did you implement laws or these edicts that were direct violations of the Constitution? Well, I was told to, because that was the best way to go. I see darkness in a much greater context, and I actually see the darkness that is looming over our head, which is the institutionalizing of slavery to the state. It is the new world innovation of slavery. If you think slavery of plantation owners and, you know, cattle owners or serfs, and regardless of whether you're in Russia, America, South America, it doesn't matter. There was slavery in every corner of the world underneath, you know, different people. But when it comes to slavery to the state, it is soulless. It is the darkest form of slavery, where Plato thought that it was the utopian or the utopia of our society. But I see this darkness as slavery to the state. And with that, I want you to think about this. And I want you to really put this into context, because as I see this, I actually see the fact that the faith that we need is we need to have not faith in government, not faith in Biden or the party. We have to have faith in the Lord and faith in what the Lord gave us, because he gave us a constitution and he knew what we would be facing. He knew that the evil of Biden and the global evil of communism was going to come to fruition. I mean, the Bible doesn't necessarily speak of Biden, but it does speak about, you know, this great globalization that the Antichrist, and anyway, I'm here to tell you that it does require faith, but I believe Biden is speaking with a forked tongue. I believe he's an evil person, and he's using this type of vernacular, this type of speech to try to, you know, try to unify, try to bring people together, because too many people don't know better. And so there's enough people out there that are putting their blind trust in one, I'll call him an idiot, because he really is an idiot, and he's not a leader. What he is he's a manager. He's managing an agenda, just like Pelosi, just like the rest of most all the Republicans and Democrats, the rhinos, I should say. I think the Republicans that are supporting the Constitution are, you know, a person without a home. You know, they're a patriot without a country, because the Republican Party at the national level is morally bankrupt. The interpretude in that party at the RNC is just rampant. And so with that, got more. We'll get to it, but when we come back after this break, I'll try to close on this whole thing and putting this kind of into context. And I want to tell you what we want to enlist your help in. And I think this is something you can sink your teeth in. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so we've got some really bad or evil. We've already talked about some of the agendas. And one of the things we want to focus on is that Biden and the Congress, both houses, want to legitimize this illegal invasion that we've been living under. But they don't want to call it an invasion. And as a matter of fact, they definitely want to steer away from that language, because that language happens to be in the Constitution. Remember, I've read to you that in Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, it clearly states that the United States guarantees to every state in the union, I want to be accurate on this, to every state in the union, a republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion. They seem to be failing in upholding and supporting the Constitution. And so what we think is really important, and if you've read my article, The Unseen Teeth in the Constitution, which you really should, you can get it at Constitutional Articles on the ReclaimingTheRepublic.org website. Just click on that little tab on the right. We don't go across. Our tabs are going up and down on the right. But bottom line, if you click on that Constitutional Articles, go find The Unseen Teeth in the Constitution, download that article and read it, and you're going to find that Section 2 of the 14th Amendment is not being followed because Jimmy Carter has been violating the Constitution when we've been violating it ever since. And Trump actually tried to undo this. So this is the one, you know, this is one of many things that I can actually take my hat off to Trump and say, you know, he was trying to do the right thing there. But the paradigm has been locked in because the progressives somehow have won the argument. And I say they haven't, because I say as the red states start standing up and saying, you can't do this, then they're going to realize that there's no greater jury than 27 states telling the federal government, you can't do this. And if you do, we will come after you. And in so doing, they will be able to flex some real muscle. And I honestly see that because we have the Constitution, because we have the opportunity and possibility of one waking up state legislators, and then that's training the trainers, because then they can start training their electorate, those who care, because there's lots of people that don't care. They just blindly vote down the party line. But what we can do is we can actually change the apportionment, because if you go and read the article that I talk about, that is, I think, Center of Immigration Studies or something like that. And so if you go and read that, it talks about how the federal government has been violating Section 2 of the 14th Amendment, as I've been telling you, that they cannot legitimately count illegal aliens for apportionment. But that's what they've been doing since the 1800s. Anyway, fact of the matter is that California has 11 extra representatives. Okay, so that means that because they have that many, and so what does 11 extra representatives mean? Well, if a representative is based out of like 750,000, then California has basically 11 million illegal aliens in it. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to see if I can pull up this table that is a part of this, because the table actually has, it's not on this one, so it's going to be on this one. So this table actually holds on to this, how many states have extra apportionment or extra representation because of illegal aliens? New York is one of them. California is one. Texas, I think, has 4. But when you add it up and you say, if we take the representation from these states that because they have favorable climate, because they allow illegal aliens to live there, then you can actually see how those states would lose representation and how the representation would then shift over to, you know, Ohio would gain 3. And there's this table in this article that you really should read, because this table lays it out as to where all of this representation would go. And voila, most of the representation would be, even Massachusetts has an extra representative because of the illegal aliens. Now, I'm going to tell you, because the 2020 census and because of all the illegals that have poured in, it's going to change very dramatically as well. There's an MIT. Just remember, MIT and Yale is not known for their respect for the Constitution, their respect for private property. I mean, they're pretty much communist institutions, Right. And so if you look at the study that they did, and let me see here, because I've actually got that as well. If you go and look at the study that they did in, what year was this? This was in September 2018. They're claiming that there are 22 million, not 11 million, undocumented immigrants. Now, I'm going to tell you that they're soft on their numbers. Now, when you heard, and if you have heard, Obama claim 11 million, he's going to legitimize the 11 million. He's holding on to a very old number. Now, if you remember back in Bush's days, when Bush was president, because they still have not provided amnesty for illegals, and they're trying to do this DACA program, which is all unconstitutional. And when somebody tells you that the Supreme Court has finalized it, it is legal because they have the final say. No, they don't. As I have read to you, as soon as we can get the states together to actually start talking about all of the problems, they will have the final say because it's their contract, not SCOTUS. It's their contract, not the president. And so they will ultimately say. So what we are wanting, and we're going to enlist you to help us, is to, you know, start bringing up this whole point of Article 4, Section 4, that Congress's responsibility is to protect us from an invasion, and legitimizing an invasion is tantamount to, you know, destroying our Constitution and our culture. There is a process, and immigration is a constitutional process. Immigration and our Constitution there's a term for it, and I want to state it very clearly because there has to be, I want to say uniform, but what does it say here? Yes, to establish an uniform rule of naturalization. In other words, a rule that can be applied to all. In other words, we don't give preferential treatment just because you happen to live in one geographical region or one direction from the United States that happens to be a border to us over everybody else in the world. As a matter of fact, if all the other countries of Europe, Asia, and so forth sued the American government to say, hey, your Constitution says a uniform rule of naturalization, and you're giving preferential treatment to all the people in the South, that's unfair. That violates your Constitution. I mean, wouldn't that be great? Having foreign nations suing the United States government for violating their own Constitution. Wow. But my point is that there's these laws that are driven by these powers in the Constitution. They're supposed to have these naturalization laws. Amnesty is not a part, and it's a violation of that law. In addition, if you look at the whole context of the invasion itself, I am telling you that the United States government is violating the Constitution by allowing 22 million, actually, and you want to know what the real number is, because back in Bush's era, it was about 20 million. I'm here to tell you we're probably close to clicking on 40 million. Now, why is it that they want to maintain this 11 million? Because that's what they think they're going to get you to. Oh, it's only 11 million. And then when that's all said and done, they're going to go, wow, look at that. We just legitimized 40 some million illegals. And that's a bait and switch, my friends. That's exactly what that is. That is a bait and switch. They bait you to say, well, it's only this number. But when everybody seems, oh, okay, well, we're going to let it happen, then all of a sudden we find ourselves, you know, that they've allowed 40 some million. Because again, Yale and MIT, as far as I'm concerned, is soft on the numbers. And you can go back when Bush was president, towards the end of his presidency, actually, I think it was during his reelection, there was a lot of talk about how many, and at that point in time, they were pushing the real numbers. I mean, even Sean Hannity was saying the numbers are something more like 20 to 30 million. And so if you look at, since Obama, with all of these caravans and Trump and so forth, with thousands and thousands, I mean, look at, I think New Mexico was one of the leading states in illegals. What's really funny is that there are so many people that come into America, illegals come into America through New Mexico, but they don't stay there. Isn't that funny? You know, is it that godforsaken in New Mexico that they head to California or they head over to the East Coast? Because there's a lot of illegals in the agricultural belt, in the Carolinas, Georgia, and so forth. Absolutely. Why do you think English is becoming the secondary language for most home improvement centers and almost everywhere? Anyway, let me get back to what I meant to talk about, because this is only one side of it. The states can actually go after Biden, and I'll tell you how as soon as we get back. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so there's a symbiotic relationship between apportionment and representation, right? I mean, it's pretty understandable that, you know, how they basically break out apportionment and representation. One of the things that very few, and I, actually, if you've listened to the show, we've had Aaron Williams come on. We've had, I've talked to Keith Broders. We've talked about our first right. And as a matter of fact, I used to promote them. And it's not that I don't promote them anymore. But, you know, because that organization cannot work with others. They can't unify. Their hands are held and tied because of their financing. They are not allowed to actually cross over to support anything other than the myopic work that they're doing. What does that sound like? It sounds like controlled opposition, right? Very much so. But anyway, they're still got a good thing going, and I forget the gentleman's name, so I'm not even going to, you know, just shred his name here. But what I want to tell you is that Madison wrote 12 amendments as a part of the Bill of Rights. 10 of those got ratified by the states in 1791, and that's what we call the Bill of Rights. However, technically, the 27th Amendment is really a part of the Bill of Rights, and it should be moved as such so that it is included, so that when you read the Bill of Rights, you actually read 11 amendments instead of 12. because it was the 27th Amendment was a part of the Bill of Rights. Well, guess what? There's one other amendment out there. And oh, by the way, if you couldn't tell, the 27th Amendment was ratified in 1991, something like that. And it had something to do with the Clintons and so forth. And so what we're looking at is we're trying to get states to ratify the First Amendment of the original 12. And so this would be the 28th Amendment. But it's an amendment by James Madison that is out there that can, once it's ratified, this to me, my friends, if you want to understand how we talk about apportionment is because this would open the can of worms. Let me read the amendment to you because this is what it says. Representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to the respective number. Oops, that's section 2 of the 12th Amendment. My bad. Or the 14th Amendment. The First Amendment of the 12, or the one of the Bill of Rights that is still dangling out there that can still be ratified. And I think 11 states have ratified it already. But all we need to do is just get to, you know, what, 26 more, 27 more? Anyway, quote, Article the First. So that means it's the first article of the Bill of Rights. After the first enumeration required by the first article of the Constitution, there shall be one representative for every 30,000 until the number shall amount to 100, after which the proportion shall be regulated by Congress, that there shall not be less than 100 representatives, nor less than one representative for every 40,000 persons, until the number of representatives shall amount to 200. After which the portion shall be regulated to Congress, that there shall be not less than 200 representatives, nor more than one representative for every 50,000 persons. So in other words, they create the what do you want to call it, the floor or the base for a representative, that a representative can only represent up to 50,000 people. So what does that mean for South Dakota that has only one representative? That means that South Dakota will get 18 representatives. What does that mean to Montana? Montana would get 20 representatives. What would that mean to Wyoming? Wyoming would get 10 representatives, and so forth and so on, instead of just one. Now, if you'd looked at it, I mean, that's a lot in comparison. Now, in going in and ratifying this amendment, it would then be Congress's responsibility to try to figure out how they would have to apportion these representatives. The bottom line is this opens the can for apportionment, and this is when all of the red states need to poke California, Florida, and the few other states that have a high number of illegal aliens where they're getting extra representation to say, you can't do this. This is unconstitutional. It violates the second section of the 14th Amendment. Clearly, only legitimate voters can be counted, or U.S. citizens can be counted. Just because Jimmy Carter didn't understand the Constitution and, you know, violated the Constitution, then as far as I'm concerned, as far as we're concerned, we're going to force the apportionment to U.S. citizens only. And then, but what I want you to understand is all of a sudden we now have 6,000-7,000 representatives. Right now there's just a handful of 400 something. How well do you think if all of a sudden we inject all of these new representatives into Congress, how well do you think Nancy Pelosi would be able to rule as the Speaker of the House all of these representatives? I want you to understand this is a complete displacement of the swamp. I have no idea why President Trump didn't garner this and become a champion of this himself. But if you want to see if you want a shot across the bow of the House of Representatives and they start talking about giving amnesty. They start talking about doing all of these things because they believe that they have this control to destroy and actually, you know, like HR1. We'll get into HR1 in just a minute. But you want to send a message that says, you know what? We're taking back control to the house of the people because the oligarchy has done nothing but destroyed our liberty and destroyed our constitution. And we don't trust you anymore. And this is going to force a much larger debate amongst the people. I know Madison couldn't fathom a nation of 300 million people. But I do know that the people and representation was foremost. They all argued and believed that a representative could not represent more than, as a matter of fact, that was language stated. One person cannot represent more than 50,000 people. They also understood that there was this, you know, this problem with these large groups of governing bodies. But that has more to do with technology back in those days compared to today. Because, oh, where are we going to put the 7,000 representatives? It won't be in D.C. As a matter of fact, we're going to actually send a little dip in the D.C. housing market if all of a sudden you take these 400 people and all of their employees. And, oh, by the way, now all the representatives can do their own job. Because we don't need to employ all of these aides anymore. Because there's plenty of representatives to do the job. Right? You have your junior representatives, and they will actually work and do the legwork and everything else. And then we'll actually have people within government that understand the process instead of having bureaucrats who have to explain, well, this is how the process works at a high level to them. You're too busy and too important to understand the details. And that, my friends, is how they do bait and switch. That's how they do all sorts of deception and so forth. But anyway, I just want you to understand that if we want to send the shot across the bow, and let them know that we're not happy with the fact that they're going to take us into this slavery of the state and how they want to move us into this. And, oh, by the way, I'm telling you, if you look at the election, one thing that we've learned from this last election is that conservatives are much greater than those who voted for Trump, because I know that there were conservatives who didn't like Trump. They, you know, they may not have voted. I don't think that they may have voted for Biden, but I do believe that there were some people that, you know, came to some logical circle, however demented they may be. But, you know, they would vote for a Republican or a unifier, but they just felt Trump was such a bad person. Okay, let's put that all aside. I truly believe that what we're looking at in America is something more close to 80 to 90 million that would actually vote for a presidential candidate who is a true unifier, not a manager of an agenda. Somebody that says, look, we've got the Constitution. We have to follow the Constitution. And every problem that we are dealing with has everything to do with how we're violating the Constitution. So I believe all we need to find one person who is capable of articulating not just the problem, but the remedy and the path forward. Now, I have some ideas, and as a matter of fact, one that comes to mind is in the Constitution Party. And so I'm hoping to talk to him to say, you know, why don't we put your hat in the ring so that we can start talking about nominating you and so that we can actually start doing the marketing and the selling, because I believe this guy's a solid fit. He is a patriot. He's a lover of the Constitution. He's a lover of liberty. He wants everybody to be able to have their own freedom and not to be compelled. I believe that most people who have been stooped and duped by the globalists and those who are selling this direction of slavery, just all it takes is a little bit of empirical data, the facts, and we will find that we'll win the argument, okay? So when we come back, I still have a couple more things to do, and we may not get into the rest of the G. Edward Griffin need-to-know news, so I apologize. But I do want you to know that we will be getting into the Monroe Doctrine and the Missouri Compromise in our next episode. We've got to draw the line. We've got to start moving forward with content, because that's understanding is learning. We'll be right back.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so going through the content and why this is important, because I want to show to you how the language and what they did with the Missouri Compromise and the paradigm that was set forth by Monroe and the Monroe Doctrine was an evolutionary thing. Too many people point to Rand Paul's or Ron Paul's, you know, famous, oh, the framers were pacifists. He's absolutely wrong. George Washington was a pacifist by necessity. There's no doubt in my mind, these men had the very same paradigm. And I truly believe that Jefferson would probably have been more aggressive than Monroe. Because Jefferson sent the Marines to Tripoli. But the Monroe Doctrine, we want to go through these things so that you understand the paradigm of what these men did, what the framers were really trying to do, and what they did with what they had. You know, there's a lot to be said for be happy with what you have to be happy with, because those who can't be happy with what they have to be happy with are those who lust for, you know, their, you know, the things, or covet the things that their neighbors have. And so that's not good. It's a good lesson to teach your children to learn to be happy with what you have to be happy with. There's nothing wrong with ambition. There's nothing wrong with working to have something more. But being happy with what you have, you know, can take you a much further distance, because then you can save money instead of getting things, and you can develop wealth instead of, you know, buying storage space because you've run out of room. Anyway, one of the things that I think is really important, because I've heard, you know, conservative entertainers, they completely miss the mark. If you want to understand, and as you know, we have been talking and we're working with states to go after social media platforms and big tech.
We want big tech to start paying their fair share of taxes, because Google is making bank off all of these transactions that are happening in your state, and other companies that are making, you know, this click for profit. You've got a special page up or what have you, and you click on an ad, whether that be Epoch Times or whomever, and the bigger the tech company, the more money that they're making. But even CNN, if you're going on to whatever website and you click on an advertisement, that is a transaction. You've now done something where that host of that page that had that ad there just got paid by that ad company that's running that little ad that you clicked on. Anyway, let's put Twitter into context, because most people look at Twitter as a media outlet. It is not a media outlet. It is a platform. Facebook is a platform. It opens up the space. And so what it has done as a platform, because the phone company, Verizon, or let's just say Ma Bell. Ma Bell for years and years existed where people were having phone conversations that were committing crimes. They were having phone conversations where they were killing people, covering up crimes, or what have you. How many times did you ever hear Ma Bell get dragged into court because they, as a platform, allowed crimes, right? No, they're not responsible for people's behavior. So why? So there was really never, correct me if I'm wrong, you call the comment line, 425-270-5416. But bottom line, I'm here to tell you that when Twitter starts claiming control, they're taking themselves out of space from being a platform and becoming a institution. And as far as I'm concerned, they're crossing the line, because Twitter is not the press. You have to understand, Twitter is a platform that allows free press, or should be allowing free press, because who is the press? It is the users. So some companies have a company presence on Twitter. So they hire somebody to actually provide the news of, we got this for sale, we're doing this, and so forth. And they're using it as an economic advertising platform for the news. It's the same thing with you reporting what you just saw across the street with, you know, some hoodlums that, you know, threw rocks at a cop car or what have you, or some cops shooting somebody or what have you, right? You are a firsthand reporter. You are the press. I can't emphasize this enough, and I've kind of mentioned this before, that when it really comes to the freedom of the press is the individual reporter that is not doing something as they are being told by up on high from an institution and or the people who pull the strings of that institution. We no longer have a free press. Our press has been bought and sold for. The only place that actually has a free press is Twitter and these social media platforms. But they've created policies, because those people that have the big money that have convinced Zuckerberg and all of these other people, all of these people that have, you know, been bought up and caught up into this globalist agenda, they've created policies that have stifled your speech. Well, okay, so nobody likes this, right? But they're a private company. They can do those things, right? Well, no. I'm here to tell you that they're not just a private company. They're a company that's engaging in interstate commerce, because as you know, Twitter, Facebook, and so forth, they have these click, you know, to the advertisings, and they get paid in each state for advertising. They get paid for the transactions that you make on clicking on the ads or what they're doing or what they want you to click on. So states have, I believe, two approaches on this matter. One is the states can actually create a law that any platform, any technology platform that, you know, that restricts any type of speech other than pornographic, and they need to get right down into the nitty gritty of what is pornographic, you know, anything that is age requirement where, you know, it has nudity, these types of things and so forth, then because you can actually create these standards, my friends, then that cannot be subject or that can't be on this platform. Those things can be regulated, but you cannot regulate political speech. You, regardless of violence or what have you, you cannot regulate. So if you block, if like what they did with Trump, if they block a political person, if they deny people and they, you know, try to make these claims of regulations of, you know, violating their terms and regulations, and they have oppressive regulations that hinder the freedom of speech and the freedom of the press, then they can be blocked. That platform will be blocked in their state, and the states can actually block it, because the states can basically go to the ISPs and tell them that anybody that is within this state is not to receive anything from those IPs, from that domain. That domain is not allowed in this state because it promotes controlling of speech, and it is, and they view it as a tabloid propaganda. The other way, and I've talked about this, and this is what I want to see done. I want to see these states actually start heavily taxing and fining social media for not being freedom of speech platforms, and tax them for their revenue that they're making. Now, if they, and actually they can create categories to say, if you are a media or a news and a viewed as a press platform where you allow the people to be the press, then we will give you a tax break on the revenues that you make. However, if you are going to be a, you know, violating the First Amendment rights and violating the freedom of speech and so forth, then you're going to be hit with a higher tax rate and fines for going after one side or the other. Because what we have to do, my friends, is we have to be adults, and we have to have the adult conversation. And what is happening is the communists and the progressives know they can't win the debate. So they suppress it. And that's why they have air horns. That's why they shout you down with hundreds of useful idiots and maniacs when you're trying to do a presentation, and they shout you down. And they're violating your right of freedom of speech at an event that is paying you, has brought you there to do that. So anyway, there are two paths that states can go, and we can actually knock out Twitter. There are people that are saying, well, you know what? Maybe states should become the platform. I don't like that. I don't mind states becoming the ISP. When you start looking at what can you do for competition and how can you be competitive, you know, I think if it can be a competitive issue, then this government shouldn't be involved in it. But if it is really a non-competitive issue like your ISP, you live in an area, tell me, by all means, give us a call, 427-270-5416, our comment line, right? You tell me how many ISP providers you have for your home computer. I'm not talking wireless, because wireless, there is competition, and they are providing that type of technology, but they're not providing your home media and all these other things. We'll get more into this a little down the road. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless, and we will have the Missouri Compromise and Monroe Doctrine next. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.